8 years old and back at her mother's side in St. Louis, Maya is attacked by a man many times her age and has to live with the consequences for a lifetime. Years later, Maya learns that love for herself, the kindness of others, her own strong spirit, and the ideas of great authors such as William Shakespeare will allow her to be free instead of in prison. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou. Starting Tuesday at noon and Wednesday at 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 51 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-70s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 10 a.m.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Prevention, and I'm your reader, Adrienne Booker, with the Audio Reading Service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading from Prevention Magazine's February 2021 issue. And now, I'll begin with The Editor's Note by Sarah Smith. Personal questions. I'm going to ask you two things I would never bring up if we met in real life. How old are you, and how do you feel about your weight? Go ahead and answer silently to yourself. But my guess is that your first answer may have something to do with your second. That's why we created Lose Weight at Any Age, page 46, a guide to what your body needs as you get older in order to stay healthy and, yes, drop pounds. We know a healthy weight is important for many reasons. To keep your heart and brain in good shape, for starters, and sure, there are some universal truths about getting there. And let's be honest, aging changes the body. So we've looked at what happens over time to give you the best strategies depending on where you are in life. What we're not saying is that aging is a problem. Aging is a fascinating thing worth understanding. And if you don't dread it, that actually works to help you live longer, according to our myth-busting story on page 56. I love when things work out like that. For another way to embrace your age, check out our story about going gray on page 26. Finally, one more question I wouldn't ask in person. Have you ever had a puzzling health issue, but then finally received a diagnosis that helped you get better? We're launching a new regular column, My Diagnoses, see page 42. And we'd love to hear your story so they can help other people find relief too. Email letters at prevention.com if you want to share. Prevention Premium, advice you can trust. We're proud of our health reporting and fact-checking, and if that matters to you, I encourage you to join Prevention Premium, our new membership program. You get another year of your magazine subscription, plus unlimited access to daily updates on our site, exclusive articles, a digital edition of our guide, all natural herbal remedies not available elsewhere, and a coupon for the Prevention Shop. Join now for $38 a year at prevention.com/join. I'll now be reading an article from Prevention's Health section entitled Lose Weight at Any Age by Tiffany Nzanwa Onjiaka. Maintaining a healthy weight can help you sleep better, optimize energy, support joints, and lower your risk of chronic conditions. Try these expert-backed strategies to lighten up no matter how many candles are on your cake. Are your pants tighter even though you haven't changed your eating habits? Does it feel as if walks and virtual Zumba workouts are doing great things for your health, but not necessarily for the appearance of your thighs? It's probably not all in your head. Let's not sugarcoat it. Each decade brings new obstacles to losing weight. Our bodies become more resistant to change, while busy lives make it easy to put our well-being on the back burner. Carrying a few extra pounds isn't a big deal. It may even help you live longer. But being really overweight is linked to serious problems, including heart disease and cancer. So it's smart to keep your weight within a normal range. Here's what you need to know about how the body changes, plus the best strategies for healthy weight loss no matter what your age. In your 30s, the big slowdown. From unexplainable aches to random gray hairs, your 30s can make you feel as if your body is turning into your mom's. Add to that the puffiness that doesn't seem to go away like it used to, even if you go easy on the wine and cheese for a bit. The major reason weight gets stickier in our 30s? Metabolism becomes less efficient with every revolution of the earth around the sun. As we get older, our muscle mass decreases, which works to slow down our metabolism, says Karen E. Gibbs, MD, a bariatric surgeon at Staten Island University Hospital in New York City. If you have less muscle, you're burning fewer calories. New moms have it especially hard. Beyond getting less sleep or having their sleep interrupted, they're dealing with a metabolism that holds on to baby weight long after their babies have made their debut. During pregnancy, the body requires more calories, and as a result, metabolism increases, says Nicholas Azing, MD, an assistant professor of medicine at Howard Medicine in Washington, D.C. It goes back to normal after delivery and breastfeeding, which can make it hard for moms to lose pounds, as if they don't have enough to worry about. Getting back into the jeans you wore in college shouldn't be your goal. You've got enough on your plate, but making an effort to live more healthily can boost your overall well-being and give you more energy to power through each day. Your action plan. Balance your plate. Focus on eating a variety of foods from all the food groups, including dairy and whole grains, says Sarah Wing, RD of Waitsfield, Vermont, a past president of the Vermont Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. As tempting as Big Promise diets are, eliminating whole food groups make it more difficult to have a balanced diet and get all the nutrients vital for good health as we age, Wing says. The only eating changes that can lead to sustainable weight loss are ones you can live with over time, she adds. So crash diets are useless for healthy long-term weight management. Use your time wisely. Super busy people juggling kids and work need their whole family on board. Figure out healthy meals that work for everyone to eat together, suggests Elise Musales, a certified eating psychology and nutrition expert. That way you won't have to make separate child-friendly meals, and if you model healthy eating behaviors, that can inspire your kiddos to eat better. DIY tacos or baked potatoes with toppings are always a hit with kids. To make breakfast more fun, Wing suggests baking scrambled eggs in a muffin tin packed with veggies and herbs and adding a sprinkle of cheddar. On really crazy work days, plan time for eating nutritious meals just as you would schedule an important meeting, Musales recommends. While you're at it, set aside time at the beginning of the week to organize ingredients so you can toss together healthy meals in a jiffy. Consider a wellness practitioner. If eating well is hard to pull off alone, that's okay. Some things require guidance. Check in with an expert to figure out which healthy habits you've got down pat and which could use some improvement. Call your health insurance company to find an in-network wellness provider or look for a member of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics at eatright.org. An expert can assess your relationship with food and pinpoint why you eat the way you do so you can address issues and kick bad habits, says Mucelis. Were lots of sweets or big portions a part of your childhood such that they now remind you of happy times? Is binging the way you de-stress? Or do you need to learn to cook veggies that taste good? The answers will help you get on the best track. In your 40s, a hormonal roller coaster. Though you're an adult, your 40s can hand you haywire hormones reminiscent of your teenage years. Women experience fluctuations and a decrease in estrogen, which encourages extra pounds to be deposited around the belly, Dr. Gibbs says. This starts earlier than you might think. Estrogen levels start to go up and down rapidly during perimenopause, the time before menopause, usually when a woman is in her 40s. A study in Exercise and Sports Science Review found that low estrogen was associated with weight gain and metabolic dysfunction, which can put you at risk for conditions such as type 2 diabetes and heart disease. Your thyroid might also throw a wrench into your weight loss plans right about now. Thyroxine, T4, is a hormone governing the thyroid gland, and low levels of it can indicate hypothyroidism, often diagnosed in women in their 40s, says Dr. Azing, adding that T4 and triiodothyronine, T3, help regulate metabolism and energy use. Diagnosis of several other health problems in addition to existing hypothyroidism prompted Naja Young, 47, a professor and filmmaker in Atlanta, to make changes 3 years ago. I was at a place where I felt very unhealthy, and I was told by my doctor that I was pre-diabetic, she says. She started with a low-carb diet, then transitioned to ketogenic and intermittent fasting. She lost approximately 85 pounds over the following 2 years. Your action plan. Have your hormones checked. Ask your physician to test your hormone levels to make sure imbalances are not sabotaging your weight loss efforts. Because Young had prediabetes and hypothyroidism, she had blood work done every 6 weeks to monitor her blood sugar and thyroid hormone levels. Your doctor may also suggest other tactics, like managing stress and limiting processed and high-sugar foods to help rebalance hormones. Avoid extremes. You likely didn't gain the weight in a few weeks, so don't make drastic changes in an attempt to lose it all that quickly. One of the first things I did was commit to exercising for 30 minutes at least 3 days a week, Young says. She also increased her daily water intake. Even if you don't see the number on the scale move right away, remind yourself that you're doing this for better health in the long run. Once you hit a goal, you can set your sights higher. Slow down at meals. Many of us eat too fast and barely taste our food. A slower approach allows one to listen to internal cues of feeling satisfied and may result in consuming fewer calories, says Wing. Research also shows that eating without distractions can help you eat less. Whether you're having a feast or a small snack, set your phone on Do Not Disturb, stow it out of view, and sit, don't stand. Wing also suggests putting your fork down and taking sips of water between bites. Pay attention to the smells, taste, and textures of every bite, too. Not only will this focus your attention and build some natural pauses into your meal, but it also might help combat stress. When you're stressed, you're not going to digest your food as well and absorb all the nutrients, says Mucelis. Your stress response takes your metabolism offline. She adds that taking a few deep breaths before a meal can calm nerves and relax your body, putting you in an ideal state to digest and take in nutrients from your food. In your 50s, chronic conditions versus weight loss. This is when long-term physical issues pop up seemingly out of nowhere. 78% of adults age 55 and older have at least one, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Many chronic conditions, such as diabetes, can interfere with weight loss directly. Others, like high blood pressure, are often treated with medications that can lead to weight gain. Adopting healthier habits can lower your risk of developing a chronic condition, help manage an existing one, and promote weight loss. I knew the excess pounds I'd accumulated in my 40s, in combination with a sedentary lifestyle and the stress of separation and divorce, could lead to a heart attack or a stroke, says Jamie Gold, 60, of San Diego, who is a Mayo Clinic certified wellness coach and the author of Wellness by Design. The end of her marriage propelled her to eat better and exercise more. Over 3 years, Gold was able to drop about 100 pounds. Your action plan. See your doctor. If you have a chronic condition, ask your physician whether it might hinder your weight loss efforts, directly or indirectly, and find out what you can do to counteract potential problems, perhaps through switching meds or modifying behaviors. At your annual physical, ask if any of your supplements or meds might be holding your weight loss back and what you can do to be sure your health stays on track. Find a new type of exercise. Hike a nearby trail or take a stand-up paddleboarding class. When we finally find a fitness routine that works for us, it can be difficult to switch things up. But there are many proven benefits to trying new routines, says Kevin Robinson, DPT, a physical therapist at the Nashville-based Performance Therapy Institute. Along with fighting exercise boredom, you can build new muscle, prevent overuse injuries, and increase your chances of weight loss. Gold added swimming to her routine, and she has participated in running races as well. Get a group behind you. Dice Dye, 59, a Tyson Foods employee in Oneonta, Atlanta, recently had an epiphany about her health. "I weighed the most I ever had," she recalls. "The muffin top and everything started, and I was getting really depressed about it." Dye joined 99 Walks, $16 per month, an online community revolving around walking programs for women to help with weight loss. She has dropped 21 pounds so far and credits her success to having a support system of others working toward a similar goal. In your 60s and beyond, everything adds up. By now you've learned a lot about taking care of yourself, but lifelong habits can catch up with you. For instance, decades of yo-yo dieting can culminate in metabolic damage that makes it hard to drop pounds. And exercise can become downright painful, as arthritis, diagnosed in 50% of people 65 and older, kicks in. In addition, it takes longer to fall asleep as people reach 60, according to a 2017 study in sleep medicine clinics. A vicious cycle tends to ensue here. A lack of sleep can undermine weight loss efforts, and being overweight can keep you from sleeping well. Your action plan. Do joint-friendly exercises. I recommend low-impact strength training exercises to maintain and build muscle mass and improve joint stability, says Robinson. Strength exercises also help with bone density, so you can avoid the scourge of osteoporosis, he says. Water aerobics is ideal for those living with arthritis and other forms of joint pain, says DeBlair Tate, an Atlanta-based certified fitness trainer and owner of fitness apparel brand 8 Figured. Don't shrug off shut-eye. Between night sweats and intermittent random awakenings, postmenopausal women are at a disadvantage. If you experience sleep disruptions, reach out to a specialist for suggestions. And try to keep a regular sleep schedule in which you avoid large meals and electronics for 2 to 3 hours before going to bed. Thank your body. It doesn't look and work the way it did in your 20s, but it's not supposed to. Over the years, your body let you do many things you loved, perhaps dancing at weddings, playing with your pets, or hugging your grandkids. Use that as motivation to stay active and nourish yourself with healthy foods. Look up some affirmations to tell yourself every morning, or jot down your feelings in a journal, suggests Mimi Sikor, DNP, a Massachusetts-based family nurse practitioner who successfully lost 30 pounds at the age of 60. Even if you don't see the number on your scale you used to see, you can be proud of what you're doing for your body. Your weight loss questions answered. Hear directly from experts during Weight, Metabolism, and Aging, a free webinar from Prevention and the American Federation for Aging Research. We'll talk about the science behind popular diets and take your questions. Join us on Tuesday, January 26th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You can sign up at afar.org/events. I'll now be reading an article in Prevention's family section entitled Overcome Your Child's Winter Blues by Holly Pesner. Feeling down in the winter is not just a grown-up problem. One-third of adults report their symptoms began when they were teens. For some, the issue started even earlier. Also, many kids experience seasonal mood changes but don't meet the diagnostic criteria, says Paul Deason, MD, PhD, an assistant professor of psychiatry at Yale School of Medicine in New Haven. This year, children may be even more vulnerable as many are shuttered inside and physically separated from friends because of the pandemic. Here's what to know and how to help. How SAD affects kids. Seasonal affective disorder, SAD, can present differently in children. It's harder for kids to convey how they're feeling, says psychiatrist Leela R. Magavi, MD, the regional medical director for community psychiatry in Newport Beach, California. Here's some clues. Sleep changes. Shorter daylight hours can boost the brain's production of the hormone melatonin, which encourages sleep. Kids might hit the hay earlier than usual, have a tough time waking up in the morning, and experience daytime sleepiness. Lack of interest in fun things. Children may find less joy in learning exciting news, playing with favorite toys, and even spending time with their closest friends. It's like seasonal apathy, says Dr. Magavi. Snacking shifts. Some kids crave sugary and high carbohydrate comfort foods and may overeat. It's thought that the decrease in natural light causes the brain to release less serotonin, a hormone that works to help fight depression. And eating these foods increases production of serotonin and temporarily boosts mood. Attention issues. Your child may struggle to concentrate or slack off in school, even if they're usually engaged. Kids may have difficulty retaining information, too. They may repeat themselves or ask the same question over and over, says Dr. Magavi. Mood fluctuations. I see a lot of irritability, fussiness, clinginess, and emotional reactivity in kids with SAD, says Dr. Magavi. Watch for feelings of sadness and or hopelessness that linger for at least 2 weeks. How to help? First, talk to your child. Tell them about how moods and feelings change in the winter. Share stories about how you feel in the winter, says Dr. Magavi. it may help your child open up about their feelings. From there, work on establishing consistent sleep routines, maintaining a healthy, balanced diet, and getting outside for exercise daily. This will increase energy and motivation, says Dr. McGavey. Consider light exposure as well. The American Academy of Pediatrics suggests opening shades, spending time outdoors, and trying a dawn simulator, which turns on a light slowly, tricking the body into thinking the sun is rising in your child's bedroom. There's also some evidence that early morning bright light therapy with a light box can be effective for pediatric SAD, says Jennifer K. Poon, MD, a developmental behavioral pediatrician and an associate professor of pediatrics at the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. Lightbox therapy is thought to help normalize serotonin and melatonin levels. While you don't need a prescription to start phototherapy, Dr. Poon advises visiting with a pediatrician or a mental health professional first. A pro can provide guidance on light boxes and determine whether cognitive behavioral therapy and/or medication, such as an antidepressant, may help. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Adrienne Booker with Prevention. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
This is a recording library of West Texas Community Update.
The Humane Society of Odessa, 7012 Mockingbird Lane, is offering curbside adoptions, vaccines, warmer, and more. Shelter hours are from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Only one person is allowed in the office and kennels at this time. For applications, vaccine, or additional information, call 381-5503 or 257-4311 or email shelter@odessahumanesociety.org. To see current pets available or to private message the shelter, visit www.facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa.
Recording Library of West Texas Radio is proud to present two of the premier magazines in publication today. National Geographic features articles about science, geology, history, and world culture. Smithsonian Magazine brings you stories about art, history, science and technology, and social progress. The hour-long block of National Geographic and Smithsonian Magazine begins Tuesday nights at 8 and Thursday mornings at 3 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
If you do want me, hand me up the shelter. If you don't want me, don't leave me hunger. Some kind of sign, girl, oh my baby.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 56 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-70s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the audio reading service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Able Living, and I'm your reader, Kevin, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Disability Scoop, and now I'll begin with Cats May Improve Social Skills in Kids with Autism, this article written by Sean Heasley. Adopting a cat can make a big difference for kids with autism, new research suggests. Children with developmental disabilities showed increased empathy and experienced fewer problem behaviors after welcoming a pet cat into their homes. They also displayed less separation anxiety, externalizing, bullying, and hyperactivity or inattention. The findings come from a study published in the Journal of Pediatric Nursing looking at 11 families with children with autism ages 6 to 14. Four of the families adopted a cat from a shelter right away and were followed for 18 weeks. The remaining families were monitored for the initial 18-week period, at which point they adopted shelter cats and were followed for another 18 weeks. All of the families adopted cats who were screened using a feline temperature profile to ensure that they were calm animals. Surveys were conducted every 6 weeks to assess the children's social skills and anxiety, as well as how well the parents and their kids bonded with their new pets. Not only did the children with autism see improvements in their social skills, but both kids and their parents forged strong bonds with their cats, and those bonds remained over time. Previous research has focused on interactions of dogs with children who have ASD, but dogs may not provide the best fit for all children and their families, especially given the hypersensitivities to sound that are common among children with ASD, said Gretchen Carlisle, a research scientist at the University of Missouri Research Center for Human-Animal Interaction, who led the study. We hope the results of this study will help encourage more families to consider the possibility of cat ownership and help more shelter cats find loving, deserving homes. Researchers say that the findings warrant a larger study of the influence of pet cats on kids with autism. Our next article, entitled Therapists Who Help Tots with Developmental Delays See Big Drop in Referrals. This article written by Josie Albertson-Grove of the New Hampshire Union Leader, and it is datelined out of Manchester, New Hampshire. Since Jennifer Lambert's son Carter was a few months old and she noticed he was having trouble rolling over, he and Lambert have been meeting with early childhood intervention specialists to address developmental delays. Physical therapists and speech therapists have visited Lambert's home in Windham, first in person and now via video, coaching her in ways to play with Carter, now almost two, to improve his physical development and communication skills. Lambert learned how to teach him to speak and show him simple hand signs to express his needs. "He's come a long way," Lambert said. Through a state-funded program run by local nonprofits called Family-Centered Early Supports and Services, all children in New Hampshire up to age 3 are eligible for similar services to help with developmental delays, such as having trouble learning to speak, walk, or with fine motor skills and with disabilities. But since the beginning of the pandemic, the number of children who are being referred to these services has plummeted. Across the state, 400 fewer children were referred to early intervention services in 2020 than in 2019, said Nancy Lucci, who runs the early intervention program in the Exeter area through Waypoint. Lucci said in almost 15 years she has never seen the number of referrals drop. "We're concerned that there are children out there we could be helping that are not coming into us in the usual ways," Lucci said. "What starts out as a slight delay could end up being a more long-term delay and or disability. We are waiting and ready and happy to evaluate and see any children," said Maribeth Rathburn, who runs early intervention services across southern New Hampshire with the Children's Pyramid. "Parents do not pay out-of-pocket initial evaluations or any services, and if a child does not need services, there is no downside to having an evaluation," Rathburn said. Pediatricians are the most common source of referrals, said Diane Bolduc of Moore Center, who works with the Early Childhood Education Program in Manchester. Doctors either postponed visits last year or used video conferencing to see children and might have missed subtler signs of delays or disabilities, Bolduc said. Fewer children are in the daycare, too, she said, and the parents who are still using daycare have fewer opportunities to observe their children with others, to see how their children stack up, which is one way parents might pick up on a developmental delay. You see your kids interacting with other kids and notice, gee, my child isn't doing what those other children are doing. I wonder why that is. The earlier a child showing signs of delay or disability gets therapy, the more beneficial, Bolduc says. Rathburn urged families who think their children might have a developmental delay or disability to seek help right away. We're losing valuable time, Rathburn said. There's a very real chance that they're missing out on some of the helpful support. Rathburn said it's helpful for children who need support in early childhood to get help, so they have the skills they need to go to school when the time comes. If children are still behind developmentally when they start school, she said, it gets harder to catch up. It presents another set of challenges for them to participate in their education and access their education the way that they need to, Rathburn said. For some children and families, they receive our services, they catch up and they're fine, and they never need help again, Lucci said. Others may need therapies or special education services as they start school, but the need could be less than it was without the early intervention, she said. A child who really needed some assistance and didn't get it, it could really be a lifelong effect, Lucci said. The early years are such a foundation of learning. More broadly, if more children need more special education services for delays or disabilities that could have been addressed earlier, Lucci said it will end up costing school districts. For the Lamberts, the therapies have reassured the family that they can work through Carter's delays. Now we're pretty confident everything's fine and he's going to catch up, she said. The focus of the therapies is on teaching parents and caregivers ways to play and interact with their children that will help the child's development. Andrew Scott, a Hollis father whose son has been getting services since he was a few months old, remembered one game they played with a therapist. He and his son were stacking blocks. A therapist showed Scott how to help his son line up three blocks and stack a fourth on top of a block on the end to make a shape that looks like a train engine, and then push it around, making a choo-choo train sound. Now he does that all the time, Scott said. They just know stuff that, as a parent, you don't see it, said Scott of the therapist. That kind of coaching, Lucci, Rathburn, and Bolduc say, have translated pretty well to video conferencing now that the therapists rarely go on home visits to limit potential COVID-19 spread. The therapists, they say things you just don't see, Scott said. Even via Zoom, they can pick up things that he's doing that aren't even obvious to me. Scott said it probably helps that he and his son knew the therapist from in-person visits when they started the Zoom sessions, but said the video conference therapy seems to be working. Scott is glad his son hasn't had to miss out on a year of services because of the pandemic. Once children turn three, they're no longer eligible for the early intervention program. Responsibility falls on the local school district. Everything about their development is happening so quickly, Bolduc said. A developmental delay of even 3 or 4 months can lead to long-term losses, meaning the child will have to work even harder to catch up. A child's development is not paused during the pandemic, though it can seem the rest of the world is. We're still here, Bolduc said, and the kids still need us. Our next article is by Michelle Diament of Disability Scoop, and it's entitled New Law Aims to Expand Access to Respite Care. Federal funding to support respite care for families of those with disabilities and other special needs will increase dramatically under legislation signed by President Donald Trump before leaving office. The measure known as the Lifespan Respite Care Reauthorization Act increases funding for the Lifespan Respite Care Program to $10 million annually through the 2024 fiscal year. The program supports a system of community-based respite care services across the country. Previously, funding for the effort stood at just $2.5 million per year. With Trump's signature, the bipartisan legislation renews a law that dates back to 2006. Since that time, 41 states have received grants to create resources and help ensure that respite care is available to family caregivers, according to lawmakers behind the bill. There are an estimated 53 million family caregivers across the country providing some $470 million worth of unpaid care each year, and the vast majority have not received any respite services, the lawmakers said. The pandemic has exacerbated the social isolation and economic insecurity felt by family caregivers and their loved ones, with devastating effects on their health and wellness. Respite may be their only lifeline, said Jill Kagan, director of the ARCH National Respite Network, which helps administer the federal government's respite care efforts. The Lifespan Respite Care Program, through very modest investments, allows states the flexibility and creativity to make sure family caregivers of children and adults are receiving quality respite services even during COVID-19. Next up, an article by Sean Heasley, Autism Families Report Major Impacts from Pandemic. A new survey of thousands of families of those with autism across the country finds that the COVID-19 pandemic has prompted symptoms of the developmental disorder to worsen and significant ongoing disruptions to therapies. Over 3,500 parents and caregivers of individuals with autism participated in the survey, conducted through SPARC, a research effort funded by Simons Foundation Autism Research Initiative that's collecting and studying genetic data from people with autism and their families. Findings were published in the month of January in the Journal of Autism and Developmental Disorders. Families were asked about their level of distress, access to services, and other impacts of COVID-19 in two different questionnaires, one completed between late March and early April of 2020, and a follow-up round in late April 2020. Most caregivers reported disruptions in services, including special education and speech, physical, occupational, and applied behavioral analysis therapies. The majority said their loved ones with autism, no matter their age, did not receive online or adaptive services in place of most services. Among those who did, however, families indicated that there was minimal benefit. Children with autism under age 5 were most severely impacted by the changes in services because they did not respond as well to telehealth, researchers said. Meanwhile, 64% of caregivers said that their changes brought by the pandemic severely or moderately impacted their child's autism symptoms, behaviors, or other related challenges, and 3/4 of parents said they felt extreme or moderate stress because of the disruptions to their lives. Overall, families with a child or dependent with ASD are experiencing major service disruptions and reported feeling increased stress and distress due to the COVID-19 pandemic, wrote researchers who noted that interventions need to be adapted for remote delivery and service providers should find ways to offer critical therapies in person with reduced risk. Clinicians and other service providers should monitor families with a dependent with ASD to watch for signs of worsening crisis risk and provide resources targeted areas of identified stress, they said. Our next article, entitled Lawsuit, Teen with Autism Died After Police Sat on Him for More Than 9 Minutes. This article by Michelle Hunter of the Times-Picayune and the New Orleans Advocate. Dateline to New Orleans, the parents of a teenager with severe autism who died last year following an encounter with Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office deputies have sued the Sheriff's Office, claiming it was responsible for the actions of 7 officers who restrained the teen in a face-down handcuff position for more than 9 minutes while trying to take him into custody. Eric Parsa, 16, of Destrehan, lost consciousness and later died after being restrained by the deputies outside of a laser tag in Metairie on January 19th of 2020. Never did we think that our 16-year-old son with special needs would die in front of our eyes and in the hands of law enforcement, Eric Parsa's mother, Donna Lou Parsa, said as she wept during a news conference held via video conference late last week. In a lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court in New Orleans, Parsa and her husband, Darren, accused the deputies of using excessive force, body weight, choke, and neck holds and restraints on the teen with developmental disabilities without taking those basic steps to make sure the teen could breathe. The family is seeking an unspecified amount of compensatory and punitive damages. They knew he was unarmed, yet they persisted in dangerously and forcefully restraining Eric Parsa without appropriately monitoring his condition until they killed him, the lawsuit says. The sheriff's office says the suit is rife with false claims and malicious accusations. While the sheriff's office remains deeply saddened over this unfortunate loss of life, it does not intend to allow Jefferson Parish sheriff's deputies to be maligned and slandered by those seeking to profit from this unfortunate situation, the agency said in a statement. The Parsa family was finishing up an outing at Laser Tag of Metairie on Veterans Memorial Boulevard when Eric Parsa experienced a meltdown, the lawsuit says, describing it as a storm in the brain that can lead to self-injurious or aggressive behavior. In business surveillance video released by the Parsa family's attorneys,
Eric Parsa can be seen slapping his head repeatedly before reaching out to hit his father. The two struggle for about 4 minutes before Deputy Chad Pitfield arrives. Pitfield was off duty but working a security detail for Westgate Shopping Center, the strip mall where the laser tag business is located, according to the lawsuit. Not long after Pitfield arrives, Eric Parsa can be seen in the video hitting himself, his father, and then hitting Pitfield, who throws Eric Parsa to the ground. Pitfield then sits on Eric Parsa's lower torso and rear end and begins to try to handcuff the teen. The lawsuit said Pitfield weighs more than 300 pounds, as did Parsa. For several minutes, Donna Lou Parsa can be seen kneeling next to her son as Pitfield remained on the teen and other deputies arrived. At some point, Eric Parsa began to struggle again, prompting the other deputies to join in trying to hold him down. Eventually, there were a total of 7 JPSO deputies involved, sitting on, handcuffing, shackling, holding down, or standing by as he was restrained and held face down on his stomach against the hard surface of the parking lot, the lawsuit says. During the 9 minutes and 6 seconds that Eric Parsa was held down in a prone position, none of the deputies moved the teen into a recovery position by sitting him up or rolling him onto his side, even though there were several opportunities when he was secure and calm, the family alleges in the lawsuit. It wasn't until his body had gone limp and he had urinated on himself that the deputies rolled him into a recovery position. By then it was too late, the lawsuit says. The Jefferson Parish Coroner's Office has not publicly released a cause of death in the case, but according to the lawsuit, the coroner's office says the teen died as a result of excited delirium due to acute psychotic episode in the setting of severe autistic spectrum disorder and disruptive behavior disorder. The autopsy listed the following contributing factors: morbid obesity, an enlarged heart, and prone positioning. The coroner's office classified the teen's death as accidental, the lawsuit said. But the Parsa family's attorneys don't believe he fits the definition of someone experiencing excited delirium and said the death should be classified as a homicide. Eric Parsa died as a direct result of the actions of the JPSO deputies, the lawsuit says. Sheriff's office officials say they were trying to control a violent teenager's outbursts and prevent him from attacking his parents and first responders. The case centers on a severely autistic teenager diagnosed with numerous other mental conditions, which caused him to have frequent violent outbursts, they said in the statement. The teenager beat and bit his own father, causing a significant bloody injury. The Parsa family is represented by William Most and Andrew Clark. The next article, written by Michelle Diament from Disability Scoop. It is entitled, Biden Plummeted Subminimum Wage, Offer Stimulus Checks to More with Disabilities. In his first major undertaking, President-elect Joe Biden wants to do away with a decades-old option to pay workers with disabilities less than minimum wage while giving stimulus payments to more people in this population. Biden unveiled a $1.9 trillion proposal within the last 2 weeks to address the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic and the economic fallout from it. The so-called American Rescue Plan includes $1,400 in direct payments to many Americans, as well as funding to support vaccine distribution, reopen schools, and support state and local governments, while also extending unemployment benefits and expanding paid leave. Notably, the plan would provide stimulus payments for adults with disabilities who are considered dependents for tax purposes. These individuals have been disqualified from the previous rounds of direct payments issued by the federal government since the start of the pandemic. The proposal also calls for limiting subminimum wage for people with disabilities. Under a new law dating back to 1938, employers were able to receive special 14C certificates from the U.S. Department of Labor, allowing them to pay individuals with disabilities less than the federal minimum wage of $7.25 per hour. But many disability advocates have been pushing for years to end the practice, which they say is outdated and exploitative. Some states and cities have already banned employers from paying subminimum wage, and as a candidate, Biden pledged to support a phase-out of that program. Now Biden is looking to make good on his promise as he prepares to take office. His proposal calls for increasing the federal minimum wage to $15 per hour and eliminating subminimum wage for people with disabilities. Information released so far does not include details about exactly how Biden would like to see this occur or on what timeline. The plan is described as ambitious but achievable. We can do these bold, practical things now, Biden said in a speech about the proposal. If we invest now, boldly, smartly, and with an unwavering focus on American workers and families, we will strengthen our economy, reduce inequity, and put our nation's long-term finances on a more sustainable course. One area the Biden plan overlooks, however, is Medicaid, home, and community health-based services. Disability advocates have been pushing for months to get extra funding allocated as service providers have struggled in the face of higher costs and lower utilization as a result of the pandemic. We are deeply disappointed that the dire needs in the Medicaid home and community-based support services system are not included in this initial plan because there is no system that is in need of a rescue more, said Nicole Jorick, Senior Director of Public Policy at the ARC. We know this is just the beginning of what we expect the new administration and Congress will put forward to help the country get through this pandemic and build the needed infrastructure to do so. But meanwhile, people with disabilities, their family members, and direct care workforce are struggling without support, and we need action. The next article, written by Scott Luxor of the South Florida Sun-Sentinel, it's entitled, Employing Staff on the Spectrum Car Wash Looks to Expand. This is datelined Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The ripple started in Parkland. Then it became a wave in Margate. Now there is a rising tide coming to Coral Springs. Rising Tide Car Wash, which hires mostly people on the autism spectrum, has now found enough success in its business model to expand to a third location. John DeAri co-founded the car wash business with his son Thomas in Parkland back in 2013. His mission was to create a social enterprise to give people with autism an opportunity to have real opportunities and real jobs that would challenge them and give them skills. DeAri was inspired by his other son who was diagnosed with autism when he was a toddler. My son Andrew was on the spectrum, he said. There were no opportunities for him whatsoever. I've always been a serial entrepreneur, so I decided that the best thing I could do was to try to give him empowerment through employment versus some form of institutionalization, like a group home. The original Parkland car wash at 7201 North State Road 7 was so successful that the family decided they should open a second location in Margate in 2017. Now the success of the Margate location at 2970 North State Road 7 led them to pursue a third location in Coral Springs at 10340 Royal Palm Boulevard, which is slated to open later this year or early next year. It took 2 years to finally hone in on the Coral Springs spot to see if we could make it work, DeAri said. Coral Springs really showed their desire to be an inclusive community by getting involved in our social enterprise. In Coral Springs, we expect to hire between 20 and 25 people. Those are not all full-time positions, and a lot of people with autism don't have the ability to work full-time. There are transportation issues. There are school scheduling issues. Some of them are in the last year of school because school goes on longer for the people on the spectrum. Unlike his locations in Margate and Parkland, DeAri has aspirations for hiring a team that is completely on the spectrum. Within the first 2 years of operation, we want to be 100% staffed with diversity, meaning employees on the spectrum. That includes the team leaders. That's our goal with Coral Springs, which should be the first of its kind. While the pandemic has been challenging for everyone, DeAri said, the rising tide has found ways of adapting that has set them apart from other car wash services. He also recognizes the positive aspects of the year. You have to look for the silver linings from 2020, he said. Rising tide has been committed to our expansion in Coral Springs. We kept our head down and kept pushing through, even with all the bad news and everything going on with COVID. DeAri said that the perseverance is a quality that has made a huge difference in getting things done despite the health crisis. I always feel a sense of hope, like we always do at Rising Tide, he said. The coronavirus too will pass, and when it passes, we don't want to be left behind, even when it was challenging this last year. We kept calling the city of Coral Springs to get approval for the business. We never stopped. The changes have been made to help prevent the spread of the virus at the car wash are thorough, and DeAri said many of them should be continued beyond the pandemic. When we opened up again in 2020, we developed a protocol whereby we would disinfect the car with fogging equipment so that nobody would enter a car unless it was already COVID-killed. On the full-service side, people would stay in their car and they wouldn't get out. They wouldn't congregate in the lobby. When they did get out of their car, our team member would immediately fog the door handles and the dashboard and disinfect all the high-touch areas along with them. Procedures for customers weren't the only thing that worried DeAri. He was also concerned about the way his teams would respond to the pandemic. Often our employees who are on the spectrum fixate on news and things going on in a fearful way during the pandemic, he said. We were really concerned about how the team was going to react. Amazingly enough, they reacted like champions, and the idea of people with autism helping the community to limit the spread of the virus through a car wash, that's pretty cool. Well, that is all the time we have for today. This has been Kevin with Able Living. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Center Solutions Podcast, followed by the Noon Book Hour at 12.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
AARP Foundation Tax Aid is looking to expand its team of volunteers for the upcoming tax season. Tax Aid, celebrating its 52nd year, offers free in-person preparation and assistance to anyone, especially those 50 and older, who can't afford a tax preparation service. Volunteers make a difference in their communities by assisting many older, lower-income taxpayers and their families who might otherwise miss out on the tax credits and deductions they've earned. Every level of experience is welcome. Volunteer tax preparers complete tax preparation training and IRS certification. The program is offered at senior centers in Odessa and Midland. Local information and details can be obtained by contacting Bob Schuler, District Coordinator, at 432-362-7204.
Starting Tuesday on the Noon Book Hour, we begin I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou. Her debut memoir captures the longing of lonely children, the brute insult of bigotry, and the wonder of words that can make the world right. Sent by their mother to live with their devout, self-sufficient grandmother in a small southern town, Maya and her brother Bailey endure the ache of abandonment and prejudice. At 8 years old and back at her mother's side in St. Louis, Maya is attacked by a man many times her age and has to live with the consequences for a lifetime. Years later, Maya learns that love for herself, the kindness of others, her own strong spirit, and the ideas of great authors such as William Shakespeare will allow her to be free instead of in prison. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou. Starting Tuesday at noon and Wednesday at 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.